Welcome, welcome.
A notable welcome to all you music lovers.
To
Journey.
To the stage.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back
your host.
Your host.
Our dad.
Brian.
Frazier.
Frazier.
Table lift up. Away we go.
Welcome one and all to Journey to the Stage. This is Brian Frazier, and I am so glad you pulled up a chair to join us in our chat today. I was looking at the worldwide audience makeup of Journey to the Stage and noticed that after the US, the country with the most listeners is France, and I was a little surprised by that, but I wanted to say thank you to everybody in that beautiful country, and greetings to you from sunny California, and vive la France. I also noticed that there are exactly 0.0 listeners in North Korea, so if any of you have Kim Jong-un's cell phone number, please feel free to text him a link to this episode, because I'm sure he doesn't know what he's missing. So, one of my favorite pastimes is looking for bands and artists that I've never heard and then sitting back and listening to their latest album. And a couple months ago, I was scrolling through my feed and a video came up of a band I hadn't heard of, and they were playing a song, and as usual, I stopped and listened, and I instantly loved what I heard. So I listened to the entirety of their new album and immediately reached out because I knew I wanted to have them on my podcast. The band was Shannon Clark and the Sugar, and I am joined today by singer-songwriter Shannon Clark. Shannon, I'm so glad you're here. Thanks for joining me on Journey to the Stage. How's it going?
It's going wonderful, and I'm glad to be here.
We were just chatting a little bit, and you guys are getting a little bit of snowfall there in Ohio right now in the midst of winter.
It is coming down in like that. It's kind of like thick. I call it kind of sloppy snow. Great for snowball fights. And so, yeah, it's supposed to freeze tomorrow. So this will be interesting. It's just kind of like Ohio is one of the most unpredictable states for weather, I feel like. I mean, yesterday I was painting my house. It was 43 degrees. I was doing some outdoor stuff, maintenance. And
oh, wow.
Today it is snowing and tomorrow will be freezing. So
that must make driving fun. I think people laugh at, actually, I have one of my friends' bands, they have a song called Californians on Ice, and they live in Tennessee, and just watching people from California try to drive on the ice is pretty comical for people from other states.
I lived in Virginia Beach for about a year when I was younger, and it's kind of the same there, not quite as bad. I mean, they don't really get a lot of snow, and I remember they like would close the schools down when it snowed, and it was like it was just snowing. It wasn't anything on the ground. It was just kind of snowing. They're like, everything's shut down. Everybody's going home. National Guard's like posted at the edge of the city, and I'm thinking, what is going on? You know, here this is pretty normal for us. Everybody around here has four-wheel drive trucks, and we're used to it. Yeah. So, yeah,
you're used to it. Yeah, growing up in Los Angeles, anytime there was rainfall, it was like Storm Watch 2024. I mean, it was just so hyped up and like, okay, people, it's raining. It's not newsworthy. Yeah. My goodness. Well, it's really great to have you here. I'm looking forward to digging into your new album, This Old World. And as we were talking before, it really is a remarkable album. Looking forward to playing a cut from it. But I wanted to spend a little bit of time just kind of learning about your journey, the band's journey. And one of the cool things I read is that your mom was a radio disc jockey, which when I was a teenager, that's what I, between being a rock star and a DJ, those are the two things I wanted to do. I do neither. But anyway, so for you, like what kind of impact did that have, having a mom that was doing that for a living?
Well, it was definitely encouraging, I think, musically. A lot of times my mom was, I was raised by a single mother. So most of the time, babysitters weren't really a thing. You know, I felt like I was with her most of the time. And she had jobs that allowed her. So a lot of times she did the night shift or the third or the second shift radio spots at different radio stations in Dayton, Ohio. And so she would just bring me to work and we would just hang out. And I'd usually sit on the floor of the control room there. And she'd, I knew when to be quiet because she always knew. She'd be like, hey, we're going to be quiet. And I always knew this to be quiet. And then I would tapping my crayons to, as I'm coloring to the music. And I didn't realize till much later in my life how much that probably encouraged me to get into music because I was around it a lot. And I think that was a good starting point in my life, you know, for sure. So, yeah, it was awesome. Yeah.
That's cool. What kind of music were they playing at the station?
So she played, she worked at a couple stations. One of them was called WTUE, which is was a classic rock station. And then I remember that one pretty well. And the other one was K99, which was a all country station. So
She
also worked at a pop station, but I don't remember. That was early on in her career. I don't remember that as much, but I do remember the rock station. I remember the country station. And so I grew up on, you know, Tom Petty and Bob Seger and, you know, all those classic rock kind of guys. And then on the country station, they were playing mostly modern stuff at the time, but that would have been in the 90s. So, you know.
A lot of Garth.
He was there. I remember more like, Randy Travis, Alan Jackson, you know, Tanya Tucker and those kind of iconic people. And for a long time, I used to just really, I had this kind of loathing for country music because it was my mom's music. Like as she got older, that was what she listened to. And I never wanted to be my mom. You know, nobody wants to be their parents. But now I actually write a lot of country songs for other people, and I write my own songs. I definitely am influenced by that genre, along with roots and soul and rock and lots of other things. But I do love that. I love the stories that country music tells. I've always liked the stories. They're always my favorite part of that.
Well, it's really cool because you can definitely hear that range of influence in what you're doing today. So that's not at all surprising that you not only had the rock, but you had the country, because you're the music you're making now with your band. Yeah, you've definitely got both of those colors that you're painting with. And we'll definitely talk more about that. I think another cool thing I was learning just as I was prepping. So your wife, Brittany, you guys were high school sweethearts, met in a band. You just kind of walk us through a little bit about your guys' journey as a couple musically and kind of how we got to where we are.
Yeah, we were raised around each other. Like we went to the same church and we kind of knew of each other, but she was quite a bit younger than I was. She's like 9 years younger than me. And so we really didn't hang in the same circles as when we were kids. And later on, when I had a band I was playing with at the time we broke up, you know, artist disagreements and whatnot. So we had, and I had this gig booked at this county fair that was a pretty big deal. You know, for me at that time, that was like the biggest show we'd ever played. And I didn't want to give up the gig. So I had like 3 months to find a band to play a show there with. So I got a couple friends together, and then I needed a drummer, and I was looking around and someone said, hey, you know that Brittany, her maiden name was Young. And she says, that Brittany Young from church, like she plays drums. She's pretty good. And she was like, you know, I don't know, 17 at the time or 16. And so I was like, okay. Wow. So, and I mean, of course I knew her and stuff. So we started practicing, and she worked out really well for the show. We just became really good friends. Probably played, you know, music for months and months and months. And then, you know, that eventually developed, that friendship developed into a relationship. And we kind of just kept playing and eventually got married. And we played in a band called Everybody Else Wins. And it was kind of like, it's a pop rock kind of band. I put this in reference to like at the time around this area, like that's the kind of music that really was like the young people were playing. I'm not embarrassed of the music now, but I am a little, you know, it's definitely like something that I grew out of. Like I'm not really huge into that scene anymore, but I think the stories and some of the songs are still there. And I think you can hear the writing there. I just was trying to navigate what was available to us. Most of the bands in this area were all playing, you know, that kind of music, and it made sense to like a little community. So we played Warped Tour. We got to play Warped Tour a couple of years in a row.
Nice.
In Cincinnati at Riverbend. And that was really fun. And we had some really great times. And then, you know, we started having kids. Once we had our first child, it kind of slowed down the band, obviously. And she took some time off. I ended up leaving that project to do another project with the band called Goodnight LA. They were out of Canton, Ohio, close to Cleveland area. And they were kind of like a pop rock, kind of like a pop rock boy band almost. We really weren't a boy band, but most of our fans were like, it seemed like younger girls. You know, that was the fan base for that. We did that for a while and did a couple records there. And that was interesting, you know. And then, that kind of leads us up to, I don't know how much you read about our story, but that kind of leads up to like, so we've been married a long time. And then I took a long break from music. So I had put out a couple records as the Everybody Else band, Wins band, and then a couple records with this other band. And I did some side stuff. I never released any of that on, online, but it's out there floating around somewhere. And then I took a long break. We, our second daughter, was really sick. She had a rare heart condition called hypoplastic left heart syndrome. And she only lived to be about a month old. She had to have open heart surgery about 3 weeks in. And at that point, I kind of just, when you're young, you think you're going to live forever and everything seems like, you seem invincible. And then something like this happens to you and it's like, puts everything in perspective. And at the time I was, you know, the bands were always struggling. It was always one of those things where I never felt like we were accomplishing anything. You know, I mean, I loved playing, but I didn't feel like it was worth the effort of being away from my family anymore. And at that time, my wife was not playing with us. She was just kind of supporting my other projects. And so I kind of took a break for several years, really took a break from recording and trying to be an artist probably 5 or 6 years. Now I did mess around with music at home with my kids and we would share stuff together as a family, but I wasn't trying to search that out as a career anymore. I kind of let time pass. Eventually it was kind of like my oldest daughter who plays in our band with us, Navy. It was her pushing me to want to play music with me that kind of got me back into it. She wanted to go out and perform and she wanted to do that with her parents. So we started kind of doing some coffee shops around and goofing off and just for fun. And then we did that very first record we did which was a live recording. So that being on that record that's overdubbed, it's just, we played at Memorial Hall as a local place. This is right before COVID. Stuff was starting to shut down, but it wasn't quite shut down yet, but it was starting to get a little weird. And, we just went in and recorded this to no audience. Just six of us went in and recorded this little EP we made, a couple originals and some cover songs, and that kind of launched that. And then, then COVID happened, and I took another year off or so. And that leads us up to today.
First of all, I am just as a dad, I could feel that, you know, just the loss. And I know... just from other people that I know that have lost children at different ages. I can imagine how that would rattle somebody and kind of shake you to your core a little bit. And, you know, understandable that you would take some time away from music. And, you know, as you guys kind of reemerged from that a little bit and started to get a little more into the performing aspect of it, do you think that has been helpful in the healing process for you guys?
I mean, I think, that's actually kind of what helped me. I thought music was, at the time when I quit playing, I think I thought it was taking away from my family. But I realized that if you do it correctly, I mean, music can be a very strong healing agent. And I think through most of my trouble through my life as a person, I think music and writing has always actually been the strongest thing for me to get out anger and sadness and happiness and anything I need to write about. It's like that's. Yeah, it's. I think writing, if you're a songwriter and you know that you're a songwriter, I think that's kind of like, it's like your therapy. Like, you know, like I've got friends that go to a psychologist to talk to for an hour. And to me, it's like I can sit down and write a song for an hour and that gives me more relief or release than maybe talking to a psychiatrist would. So yeah, definitely has definitely helped and it still helps. I mean, I write constantly, not always good stuff, but whatever needs to be said. So I write it down. Some of those songs never get the light of day, but...
Well, and it's not surprising to me that you guys create music in the Americana sphere because the storytelling that I don't want to say is acceptable is different than maybe you would have found in a pop rock type of a setting. And that's one of the things I love most about Americana is it does bring in the storytelling capacity of country and mix in some rock and roll, some folk. And what's really neat is as I listen to your album, and I think sometimes it's in your vocal delivery, there's a little bit of soul and R&B in there. Am I wrong in hearing that? Or do you have any of that influence in your palate, so to speak?
Yeah. So when I was younger, my sister was into she was older than me. She was in the hair metal scene and that's all she listened to. And at the time I hated that kind of music. So I kind of pushed my interest into more soul writing. So soul listening. So of course, like I said, Bob Seger, I think he's got a lot of soul. I actually started listening to a lot of R&B music when I was in junior high and high school. And I grew up listening to I always loved Motown, but I'm old enough to where I was around when Boyz II Men came out. Coolie High Harmony was the best album at the time for me. I was this is such a cool album. And, I'd never heard people do that with their vocals, like Tony and Tony Braxton, SWV and Whitney Houston and Bobby Brown and all these R&B artists. And so I took a long time, I think, listening to that. Those are the folks that helped me learn how to sing like that. I have to give them credit. We had a show in Cincinnati a couple months ago and everybody was dead tired. It was a late show. We were home at 2 a.m. and you're going to laugh at me, but I grew up with remember the Sister Act movie, with Whoopi Goldberg?
Oh, yes. Okay,
so I watched that movie when I was a kid and they had the second one, which had Lauryn Hill in it. And there's some great singing in that movie. It's phenomenal, And so I just was scrolling through my Spotify and it popped up or something, and I started listening to the soundtrack, and I'm just cruising, and I'm just belting all these songs out, and they're half of them religious songs, but they're done so well. And I get pulled over by a cop because I am speeding a little bit too much. And I'm just I think it's so funny that I hope I get a ticket. It's just a great story, whatever, And he comes up and he's you're going a little fast. I was only going 6 or 7 over. It wasn't crazy, but and I start laughing. He's like, "What's so funny?" I was like, "Yeah, I was cruising to this old music I used to listen to in high school, and I wasn't paying attention at all." And he's like, "What did you listen to?" I was like, "Oh, I can't tell you that. It's just too stupid." He's like, "No. What are you saying?" So I tell him Sister Act. He just starts laughing, and he goes, "You're free." He lets me go. He's like, "You're free to go." It was so ridiculous. He's like, "Well, this guy can't be lying because he's just
Let's talk about who else is in the band. So just kind of walk us through. So it's your wife. Kind of tell us what people do, because I think there's a cousin by marriage in there. Just maybe walk us through
who else. So the original founding members of the band are just myself, my wife, Brittany Clark. She's the percussionist. And then my daughter, Navy Clark, is she kind of does a variety of things. And she started out with just singing in the band as backup. Then she moved to keyboard. She plays banjolele and a few things. Mm-hmm. Currently, we have her playing bass. She's our new bass player. And that kind of came out of just needing, we have a small market of musicians in this area. And because our schedule's kind of erratic and we travel a lot, it's hard to find someone to go with us a lot. So we just finally, I just said, "Hey, why don't you just run it?" So we've been working on with her for that, which has been kind of nice. So it's got it stripped back to
Very cool.
And then that's the original members of the band. And then, so our first record, Marks on the Wall, was done with those three. And then we had a Michael Chavez set in on guitar on that record, who was he's played with lots of people, John Mayer and a bunch of other well-known artists. But that was the three of us. And then my cousin through marriage, I say through marriage, so his dad married my cousin's ex-wife. So it's it's really not. Yeah, we say that because it's people like a family band. So yeah, we're family enough though. Actually, our very first band that we ever played in together, when we first started playing at that fair that I told you about, that we, Joey is the person I'm speaking of, my cousin, Joey Howard. He was in that band with me and him and Brittany, my wife, before we were married.
Oh, wow.
So that was our very first band together. That was over 20 years ago now. So we had a long history of playing music together. We actually cut a record, us three, back then. You can find that on Spotify under Everybody Else Wins. If you dare to go down that path, I'm not going to say it's good, but it was a record. We were all very, very young. So he moved back from South Carolina, and he was filling in on guitar for us for a while, and we just were with me being the main singer and the guitar player, I wasn't able to do a lot of guitar work while I'm singing. And I kind of always wanted to have someone extra. So he came on and was doing some things. And he's also a great singer. So he's got, we have a lot of three-part harmonies that we do, and our voices just blend. We've been, we've been singing together since we were kids. So it just kind of is a natural fit. And so he's kind of taken that role. And then sometimes if you catch us out, we have a couple unofficial members of the band that you'll see mentioned often. So one of them is a cello player by the name of Michael Ronstadt. Ironically, he is Linda Ronstadt's nephew. Nobody ever believes me, but yeah.
Really? I was just about to ask, because a relation, that's not a common name.
He is related to her. And he will come in and play cello. He actually co-wrote the song Grumpy Sun off of our last record. And then sometimes we have a fiddle player by the name of Doug Hamilton, who's an old Nashville slinger dude that used to live down there. And he lives up here now. And sometimes he'll come out and he plays on our last record on the song Red River. So those are kind of like unofficial members.
Nice. Well, cool. This is a good spot to play a song. We're going to play the opening track for the album. It's also the title song, This Old World. Let's play it, and then we'll dig into it on the backside.
Days late as a checkout girl, she can't seem to find a smile anymore. Cause a madman came into her daughter's school and took the only life that she ever knew. Oh, this old world, we'll bring it down. Thank you.
I love the lyric to the chorus. This whole world will bring you down. Don't let this world bring you down. I love that. To me, the opening guitar part, because this was the first song I heard from you guys, I'm like, wow, this sounds a little Springsteen-ish. I love it. It's kind of got that little bit of a Springsteen guitar riff to it. What can you tell us about the song? What were you, obviously the message is clear, but you know, what made you want to kind of go in this direction?
I wrote that song originally as a John Prine style song with very slow finger picking. And Joey and I are working on some different things one night, and we came across another progression that we liked a little bit better. And we started humming some melodies, and it was like a totally different avenue. And I said, hey, wait a minute. I think this song I was working on would work perfect for this. So I pull up my lyrics for This Old World, and I start singing along with this new melody. And it's like, nice. Right away, we're like, this is it, you know? And as much as I would love to take credit for that guitar riff, our producer, that's our producer, that guitar riff, the original way I played the song was just kind of right at the top. We just came in heavy with the, that extra riff wasn't there. The song's already long. And so it was kind of a, we weren't sure if we wanted to add an extra riff, but once he kind of was playing around, and he comes up with this riff over top of what we were already playing. And we're like, that has to be the start of the song. It's just too cool to, and it makes me and Joey mad because we're always like, it's such a simple riff. If you listen, it sounds complicated, but it's very easy to play. And we're both like, we should have done that. Why didn't we do that? We just didn't hear it, you know. But that's why I always say, man, if you can afford to work with a good producer, if you're serious about music, not everybody needs a producer. There are people I know that do very well on their own, but I'm one of those people that I can doubt myself in 5 minutes, be really confident, and a minute later I'm doubting myself. Mm-hmm. And I love someone to bounce ideas off of and reassure and be honest. You know, that song was kind of written as a heartfelt portrait of modern American life. That's kind of the idea behind it. Just my honest observations of what I see in my personal experiences. You know, it's funny, when I wrote that song, I wrote it in a way, I like to write songs in a way that anyone can relate to them. And specifically with the idea of that song, I say, you used to pray, you don't pray no more. That was at the end of each thing. I always say this, right? And after end of each verse. So what's interesting is I did that for two reasons. One, you can take it two ways. I feel like people that are pulling away from a religious aspect or a spiritual side of them, maybe they don't want to connect with the church or religion anymore. They say they used to pray, they don't pray anymore, like it's a good thing, right? And then you have people who hear that and they say, oh, the reason why their life isn't good is because they're not praying anymore. And so I always thought that was an interesting, I do those kind of things on purpose because I think it's, you get out of the song what you want it to be in a way, you know, you interpret it your own way. And it's interesting because a lot of my, you know, I have so many different friends from so many different vast backgrounds, and they all text me like, oh, this is, yeah, I totally get what you're saying here. It's like, yeah, well, I did that.
Well, it's some really good storytelling because each verse is, it's like its own little vignette, so to speak, within the bigger narrative that that you're accomplishing in the broader picture of the story. That's really cool. I really love the album in its entirety. And as I mentioned earlier, I think before we were recording, there aren't a lot of albums that do that for me, but I can listen to the whole album and it's very, very well done. And I think what's interesting though is just as we were talking, how you kind of have this pop rock aspect to your earlier life. I can hear that in some of the hooks because you're actually really good at writing a very memorable hook that you would find in the pop world. Not that it sounds like pop, but something that it's just a good hook. You know what I mean? And so I think that sensibility has kind of carried with you, you know, which is pretty cool.
I appreciate that. That's very kind of you.
I see the band just as an outsider as really the two strongest assets that I see that you guys have is great songwriting. I think this album is just full of really, really good songs. And then the harmonies, which we talked about earlier, I saw that you guys wrote, you know, blood harmonies, and there is something really unique about the blend, the vocal blend family members can make. I don't know what kind of mojo accomplishes that, but you guys do have a very rich harmony that you make. And I think that is one of your greatest assets. It's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. I've always, singing with my daughter is probably one of my favorite things to do. Like we're always walking around the house humming, and you know, I'll be singing something and she'll just come in with a harmony, or she'll be singing and I'll throw in something with her. And it's like, I remember I have a video of her singing Sweet Carolina from Ryan Adams on my kitchen table when she was about 4 or 5 years old. She's on the kitchen table.
Wow.
Late at night, and I'm playing the song and she's singing the harmony with me. I taught her how to sing it at that age, and she's always had a natural gift for that. So,
well, if you guys ever did a cover of that song, that would be a cool little intro, that old recording.
Oh, gosh,
that would be kind of fun. I'm curious, you've been doing this you've been in music, I mean, pretty much your whole life. What would you say if you had to lay out what your favorite part of what you do and the least favorite part of what you do, what would you say those are?
Writing music and recording music are my two favorite things. So writing a song and then being able to take that song in a room full of musicians, either us or if we go down to our producer and get to do that in front of him, is probably my favorite things. People always say, isn't the live show? And I'm like, yeah, live shows in the right setting can also be just as amazing. But I feel like there's more live. I never have a bad experience recording because I really enjoy that. I have had bad experiences playing live shows. So I would say my least favorite thing doing specifically nowadays is the fact that every artist has to be their own marketing team, their own radio, promoter, their own record label. I mean, there's so many things. It takes so much time to balance. And with being a full-time dad and, I also have other obligations besides the music. So it's like, it creates a very, we have a booking agent we work with. We have played some big festivals. We've played in, 15 to 16 states in the last couple of years. I mean, we've gotten around, all this is funded by me or, my own personal money or the band. Any money we make, we have to put back into the band. And, the records are so expensive. The records still cost the same to make now.
Yeah.
But yet Spotify pays you less and less and less. Now they're going to be paying even less. I'm doing everything. If you look on, Indie on the Move or CD Baby or any of these places, the do-it-yourself gurus that tell you exactly what to do. I mean, we follow all this to a protocol. We always try to listen and do what they want you to do. And, from an outside standpoint, like, oh, you guys are doing great. You got a lot of listeners a month. You got a lot of fans, and our Instagrams and things like that look great. But that to get people engaged in your music, to get people to watch your music, cost time and money. I mean, you might get lucky and get an algorithm that hits and maybe your thing gets seen by a lot of people. I've had friends that happen to. It's like the lottery. You never know if it's going to happen. But most of everybody else, if you're not getting lucky that way, you're just having to work. And that takes, to me, so much of the energy of creating music, takes it right out.
Yeah.
Like I hit a wall this year where I was just like, you know what? Like I'm kind of like tired. I was doing my taxes and I saw what I spent last year in advertising on social media to get the record out and to get, people listening to music. Yeah. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is just, it's insane what you have to spend to, I mean, and maybe not everybody has to do this. There's other ways to do things, but I'm just, from my experience, if you want to get noticed, I mean, the algorithms online anymore, they're not that kind to people. I feel like you have to put money behind almost every ad to make it successful. Even if I have 15,000 followers, it doesn't matter. It's like I have to put $100 into every ad so that people can see it. You feel like you're in an endless sea and you're just swimming on top of every other artist who's dropping new songs every 5 minutes. And it's like, and I'm not that kind of person. I don't like dropping a lot of singles. I like albums.
I completely understand what you're talking about. I've heard that from other artists too. And that's why I'm such a fan of indie bands and indie artists. And I always encourage people in my audience to, yes, stream their music, but also, buy a download. You can buy an album for $10, or buy something physical. And you guys have a great merch store. I don't know who designs your merch, but it is really well done. I mean, cool shirts and hats. You've got vinyl and things that are there. So I'll link that in the show description so people can swing by. If they love your music, man, buy some merch. I feel like a broken record because I say it just about every podcast I have with an indie artist, but you guys aren't making the money from streaming. It is increasingly difficult to make money on the road. So we have to, as listeners, if we want good art to continue, we have to get behind you guys. And, no indie artists are getting rich. It's just the reality of where things are, but we can help them keep going. And so I hope, I know everybody, probably in my audience is rolling their eyes because I say it so much, but it's true and it's from the heart. And so
if 100 of those listeners would go buy a shirt or a vinyl or something from our website, I would be over the moon. Like, it would be 10 times more encouraging because I know they took the time out of their busy schedule to go. And that is, to me, just so much more rewarding as an artist for me. And specifically, like, people emailing us, telling us that a song affected them in a certain way, or, you know, the comments you made about our album being really great, like, that will make me feel good for the next month. Like, I'll live off of that comment when someone says something positive. And in the same token, someone who says something negative, it can be the same effect. It can hurt an artist. I think a lot of people, I see videos on their artists will put out like a live video or something, and someone will make a negative comment. We've all had them, you know. Oh, your voice sounds pitchy, or your guitar's out of tune, you know, something silly. And it's like, you know, yeah, sometimes that's true. There's things like that. But you know, just because somebody isn't great doesn't mean they shouldn't get encouragement. You know what I mean? Everybody starts somewhere. And if you would have listened to somebody when they were 17 in their bedroom versus when they were 25 and had been playing out for 3 years, there's a big difference there.
Yeah, words matter. Especially for people who create anything, the encouragement is always a necessity. And that's why, you know, if somebody writes a kind review or something for my podcast, I'm like, man, that's really cool. Cause you know what that's like. You release something and you don't really know where it's going. You're just putting it out there and you can see downloads and listens and streams, but who's really connecting with this? And you're right that when you get something that's kind and says, man, that song really picked me up. And I needed that today. Yeah, that's fuel right there for an artist or anyone who creates something. So yeah, I definitely can understand that. As we get close to the end of our time here, I am going to put all of the links to your guys' website so people can check out when you guys are. I know you've got some dates booked in February, and this will probably release sometime February, early March. But so people can check the website for any other tour dates you guys have coming up. I'll link the store, all that good stuff. I'll put all your socials. So anybody who's interested in following Shannon Clark and the Sugar, just scroll down and all those links will be down there for you. So we're going to have a little bit of fun here, Shannon. I'm going to ask questions. You can't overthink them. First thing that comes to mind, if you're like me, I'm a classic overthinker.
Oh, yeah.
So these would be simple things, but they'll be fun things. Are you ready for this? Because we're going to start the clock.
Let's do it.
All right. Here we go. What's an album you never get tired of?
Ryan Adams' Easy Tiger.
Ooh, nice. The artist, living or past, that you would most like to share the stage with?
Man, that's a good one. John Prine.
What would you be doing if you weren't a music artist?
Professional hand model.
Wow, you and George Costanza have that going. Okay. What is the favorite pet you've ever had?
My current dog, Hawkins, who's an Irish wolfhound. He's my favorite dog I've ever had.
Hawkins, as in Stranger Things Hawkins?
Yep.
All right, I like it, I like it. The actor you would want to portray you in the movie of your life?
Ooh, Robert Downey Jr.
Wow, okay, I like that. I could see it. All right, favorite Beatle?
John.
Beatles or Stones?
Beatles.
Sunrise or sunset?
Sunset.
You did great, Shannon, you did great.
Cool. I get a free shirt or anything?
Yeah, you do. You could swing by the Journey to the Stage merch store. Check is in the mail. Well, man, it's been great connecting with you, Shannon. I really, really enjoyed it. And I just encourage everybody listening, add this album to your listening playlist. And some things we could really do to help these guys is listen to the album. And if you like it, share it on your socials. Say, hey, here's this cool band I found. Check these guys out. Send, you know, any streaming service, you can send a link to your friends. So you can export an album and share it with somebody on Spotify, Apple Music, any of this, and say, hey, check these guys out. Swing by their store, buy something, check them out live, send an encouraging note. We have to keep the people who are making great art encouraged and funded so they can continue doing what they're doing. So, Shannon, I'm really, really grateful for your time. It's great to hang out with you, and thanks so much for joining me today.
Ditto, Brian. Appreciate it having us on. It was awesome. Thank you.
Awesome. And if you guys ever get out to California, I'd love to
swing out and see you guys. So we definitely keep an eye on your tour dates. And thank you everybody for listening. If you are listening and have not subscribed to Journey to the Stage wherever you listen to your podcast, please do so. And ratings and kind words are always very encouraging. You can follow us on Facebook at Journey to the Stage Podcast. We're also on YouTube. All those links will be in the show description. So thank you for listening. And tune in next time when we're going to walk a stretch of road with another artist. So keep your bags packed and join us on the next Journey to the Stage. And that, my friends, is a wrap.